Welcome back to After the Buzzer. We're back from a little hiatus. Mike Gross, Gordy Jones, hanging with you in the man cave. Gordy, how you doing?
Outstanding, sir. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. You had a week off, right?
Yes.
A little vacation.
I did. I was in Hilton Head, so
wow.
That was a nice thing.
Wow.
That was a very nice thing.
I'm envious. I'm going to New York City tomorrow to help the kid move.
Nice.
That's going to be a little bit less fun than Hilton Head. We'll see. All right. Anyway, we are back after a week off, and we're going to talk. Our guest tonight is a guy that a lot of people will recognize around this area. Great high school player at Conestoga Valley. Excellent college career at Syracuse. Little taste of pro football, which we'll talk about. And now runs a sports academy at Spooky Nook, in which he trains kids for not just football, but all kinds of sports. He is the MVP, a former MVP of the Big 33 game. There's a fun fact.
Yeah,
Daryl Daniel, welcome to After the Buzzer.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
You got it. Tell us a little bit about your operation in terms of how many kids you work with, where do you work with them, and what kind of approach do you have that maybe is a little bit different because there's a lot of trainers out there.
Yeah, it is. So to touch on your question, so what I do is I train in three phases, okay? When I first started off doing this, I started off as just a wide receiver academy, just working on receivers. And
yeah.
I had a couple people where they were just like, my daughter plays soccer, you know, she wants to work on some speed and change, right? Something you can work on. I said, that's something I can do. And then Next thing you know, a friend of mine was like, hey, my son needs to get stronger. You think that's something you can do? And But then what happened was, you know, like I have a wide receiver academy. So, you know, if you're a soccer player or you play lacrosse, you play basketball, you click on my website, you say it's all football. You're like, I don't really want to go to a football guy. So That's how I went from the wide receiver academy to the whole sports training academy.
Right.
And the reason why I chose whole, like you guys started off with, is because, you know, I train more than one sport. And not only do I just train more than one sport, I take care of the entire athlete, therefore the word whole. So the trainee covers speed and agility, strength, explosiveness, and of course the biggest thing we all know, hip mobility, flexibility, change of direction, and then sport specific. So that's where I kind of started at. So just like I said, it started with receivers, but as I started to grow, I built a program where there's nothing, whether it's physical therapy, whether it's personal training, you know, I have quarterbacks, I have linemen. So my program has grown so much over the years, and I've added so much to it, and I've been very, very fortunate to have a lot of great athletes come through.
To what extent, this is interesting to me, you sound like you have a lot of things in there to improve athleticism, but like, for example, if a quarterback... If you're working with a quarterback, are you working at all of the stuff that goes into that position, the decision making and the like?
Every single thing. So again, we'll start with the body. So yeah, like a quarterback, they need to have a good base. So we need to work on our footwork. They need to have a strong core because they need to step and roll their hips through. They need to have strong shoulder and shoulder mobility, so we work on shoulder mobility, and then they need to be able to move, so we work on our change direction. So as far as the game part, we literally, once we get to where phase three, where I am now, is when we start moving outside, and so now we start talking about coverages. So I'll have receivers run routes, so I say, okay, we'll do half field coverage too. So I give the quarterbacks a concept, and I say, what do you read? Okay, so what does the linebacker on that side have? What's his responsibility? So now they're better on this, like Jack Reed, going to his senior year, we really worked on reading coverages. Cam Harbaugh, we worked on stuff. I've been fortunate to work with Zach Hahn a little bit because he spends a lot of time with Catapio and different guys like that. He has a great quarterback coach there at Mayhem Central. So, like, when those guys come to me, if they have somebody like a Catapio or he has his coach at Mayhem Central, my job is to work on the footwork, his mobility, his range of motion, all those things. So, like, I leave no stone. When I say no stones unturned, and then I add also the mentoring aspect to it. So I consider myself like a one-stop shop because I'm going to hold you accountable. There's going to be things you have to do in order to continue to train with me because I want people, when they come to me, to understand this is serious business.
That's interesting. And the other piece of it that I think is interesting is that that people don't maybe don't realize, or let's reword that. Maybe years ago they didn't realize that you can get faster and quicker. How can you get faster and quicker? How do you do that?
And it's funny you said that, because we were wrong. Like I say to, and a couple of my older friends, we talk about, I couldn't imagine if I had a Daryl Daniel when I was going through high school.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't, because people, like I've heard Deion Sanders say, oh, you don't need a trainer. If you ain't fast, you ain't fast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
If you don't believe that, ask Zach Hahn, who ran a 5.2 240, and at Penn State this past Friday ran a 4.95.
Okay.
If you don't believe that, ask Luke Hines over at Lampeter Strasburg, who is now going to Shippensburg, who ran a 5.02 40, now runs a 4.78. So if you don't think you can change and get faster, then you're wrong.
Yeah.
There's technique. There's so many running for. I mean, some of these kids, when they come in, they literally do not know how to run.
Yeah.
They don't know how to create momentum. They don't know how to the knee drive angle, arm angle. So like, they waste a lot of movement. So if you clean that up, some of these kids, you clean up. I had a kid who goes to Lancaster Catholic, Brandon Wade Jr. He ran a 4.65. His dad came to me before they went to Penn State. I seen him. I said, "Hey, I think he can run a 4.85. If we clean up a couple of things, he goes to Penn State. He runs a 4.58."
Because what were you? You were like a 4.5 guy in high school, weren't you? Something like that.
Yeah, coming out of high school, actually, I ran a 4.71 coming out of high school.
Wow.
When I reported to Syracuse as a freshman year, they test, I ran a 4.65. When I left Syracuse, I ran a 4.38.
Interesting.
A 4.38.
Whoa! And a 4.42 electric.
Interesting.
Laser.
Tell me, what led you down this path where you wanted to get into the training side of things?
To be honest, you know, when I got done in the NFL, you know, I was a teacher, and after being a teacher, I was at UPS for 13 years. So it was just like little stuff here and there. You know, hey, would you, you know, you got time? You mind working with my son? He's a receiver. Just yeah, you know, that type of thing. And I sat down one day and I was like, I wonder if I could make this a business. And if so, how do I go about doing it? So before I jumped into training, I wanted to build my platform, build my plan, build my website. What am I trying to sell? What do I want to do? So the first thing I said I want to do, because, you know, like you guys said earlier, everybody's a trainer. So how do I separate myself? How do I separate? So I'm going to separate myself by adding a mentoring aspect. An accountability aspect. So when you come to me, we're going to start off with a handshake. We're going to start off with eye contact. We're going to talk about elite, and you're going to tell me what that word means to you. And I'm going to, so like, there's all these different things. So I set a foundation, and I set a standard, and then from there we start training.
Interesting.
So what have you had to learn to work with a field hockey player, to work with a soccer player, to work with a lacrosse player? What have you had to learn about sports-specific stuff? And I imagine a lot of it just is universal for all sports.
Yeah, it's universal, but I also have to study the game.
Yeah.
I've been very fortunate. I've had five of the top 20 field hockey players come out of high school that I've trained.
Wow.
My number one is Lauren Wattis, who's at Northwestern, who played in two back-to-back national championships. They won one 2 years ago. They lost this year to North Carolina in a close game.
Yeah, that's right.
She's now, she was on a U21 team, and now she just got picked to be on the Olympic team. So I had to learn the game and understand what she needed to do. So, for example, I had to learn the terminology, because if I wanted her to do something, I had to use her word like possess the ball, okay, make a move, score. Like, you know, and people don't realize using correct words, if you're trying to get an athlete to do what you want to do, you can say, all right, kick the ball, kick it up. Like, you got to use the word term. So watching the game, seeing how she needs to move, and then literally she would send me film. I would break down the film and see where her weaknesses are, and then I would correct them. To me, a good trainer corrects behavior. So I saw what she did, and her dad had been a field hockey coach. I remember him coming out to our session. He said, I know what I'm watching, and I don't understand, and I can't believe that you literally understand the game, and everything you see we're working on, I see you working on with her, are things she needs to fix.
Yeah.
He was blown away. He's like, I'm a field hockey guy, and I know you're a football guy, but to see you're fixing things that she needs, and then she would go there, and she got more confident and more confident. She played as a freshman, and was starting to hit the rest of her freshman year. She started as a sophomore. She's on the Olympic team. So, I mean, she's growing. So whether it's lacrosse, I have a lacrosse goalie. They just lost, I think they just lost in the state semifinals to Larry in Strasburg. Bryce Thomas, same thing with him. As a goalie, what does he need? He needs to be able to move laterally and work fast in small spaces.
Yeah.
So his mobility was not good. His hamstring was tight. His back was tight. He's got to work on his flexibility. Then he had to understand how to change directions and how to move in small spaces. If you would see some of the drills we were doing, it was unbelievable. So now, because he's able to fix those deficiencies he had, the players on the lacrosse team said he single-handedly, at times, carried them through games. So if you fix a goalie whose change direction is not good, you end up losing in a state semifinal in a game you almost won. They were a player or two away from going to the state championship.
Yeah.
So that's what it's all about. You got to study, because as we get older, we never have all the knowledge. So I'm always learning. I'm always reworking my plan. When my college guys come home, my guy, Brandon George, comes from Pitt. When Anthony Ivan comes from Penn State. When I talk to, when I see Nick. When I see my guy at Exeter. Oh, my God, I can't believe it's Joe Blank.
Joey Schaffler.
So what worked? What didn't work? What do we need to fix? What do we need to clean up? When those guys are coming back, they give me information. And I continue to build and build and build. So, like, when people come in, I'm good at assessing things.
Yeah.
I see the deficiency, and we're going to work on it. We're going to fix it. And then as we continue to fix it, we're going to get trained. And as we train, we get better, we dominate. That is my method from day one.
Let's talk a little bit about Nick Singleton, because he is – I cover Penn State football. He is such a tremendous athlete and also seems like – a tremendously hard worker. So I assume that you did not have to work on the intangibles and the attitude very much, but what is it like for you? I would think it's a treat to work with that kind of a student in every respect, attitude and talent.
So when I met him, he was 12 years old. I think he's about to turn 13. So after the first session, I told his dad, there's something here. I don't know, he's young, but I said, I'm telling you, like, he is beyond focus. He is beyond serious about this. His level of hard work, like, I don't have to tell him to pick it up or nothing. I said, there's something here. And I remember after his freshman season, and I got a message from William & Mary, the head coach, message said, hey, obviously we can't talk to freshmen, and I know he's one of your guys. Can you do me a favor? Can you let Nick Singleton know we'd like to offer him? And I remember calling his dad, he's like, what? You just got an offer for William & Mary. And they were blown away. I remember going on a visit, going to Syracuse and standing on a 50-yard line talking to Dean Dino Babers and talking to Coach Franklin and all those guys about him. And as he got to that point and as he just developed and as he grew and he grew, his hard work is unmatched.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, he's humble.
Could you possibly articulate what it is like to watch a kid like that succeed to the degree he has? What that's like for you? How gratifying that is?
Let's see. How can I put this in words? Like, I just think I've been fortunate to get to a level that when I see it, I know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does.
I saw it at 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming with Kobe, and Kobe was a tough butt, but it was, I just, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when sophomore year, I remember talking to his parents, and I told him, I said, your son may go down in history as one of the best players in Berks County history.
Yeah.
Well, and he's like, ah, his dad's like, I don't know, man. I'm telling you, like, he'll have eight touches in a game, and then eight touches out 200 some yards for four touchdowns.
Right. How often do you work with the kids that remind you of you at that age?
Another great story is Anthony Ivey.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I am very particular, and I'm very critical, and I'm very, 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 very tough
mm-hmm.
to. people on doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Ivey probably was one of the purest route running guys I've ever been around. When I say beautiful, like, to me, running routes is like poetry.
Hmm.
It's like a beautiful painting, and he was a beautiful painting. He was so smooth and so fluid in and out of his breaks. He could run any route. And I remember that one, going into his senior year, we got the summer, and we spent time working on the routes, and I remember watching him run routes in games, and it was unbelievable how sudden he was, how he trusted his technique,
mm-hmm.
how he, I mean, every single detail we worked on, he did it to, I mean, to a fault. I mean, flawless.
Hmm.
So, I have another guy, Hilton, and I have another, you know, Isaiah Gilmore from Wilson, who's now shipping.
Yeah, right.
And Hilton's probably another guy, too, but I'm talking about as far as raw speed, athleticism, Anthony Ivey for that guy, but, like, Hilton's probably one of my most consistent, smoothest guys.
Hmm.
But I have a lot, I mean, but I can go to Bo Heiser, who, as a freshman, you know, I don't know if he tied a record or broke the record for his longest reception in East Charlesburg history, 99 yards, but, like, raw athleticism that you add technique to, but Anthony Ivey probably was Mona Lisa to me.
Wow, I like that.
Wow.
It's a good line. I like the line.
That's what...
it was beautiful.
Penn State fans want to hear. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think from talking to the new receiver coach, he's going to be the dude. You know, like, you know, as we all know, like, as a freshman, you got to get acclimated, get things going, and just take a deep breath, and you just got to go get it. And yeah. I think he could be the next guy. I mean, they got guys there now, but when it's his turn, I think he could be one of those guys that they have in the league right now. He could be the next guy.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your career. The really good, going way back to CV, the really good team was your junior year, right?
No, sophomore year.
Sophomore year, and that was Mike Cook and Corey Jones, et cetera.
No, Tyler Demme was the quarterback of that team that went to the state championship.
Okay.
Brady Myers, I think, was the
junior. Yeah.
All 15 games as a sophomore.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about, first of all, playing for Cantafio, who is one of the all-time pieces of work, and also, you know, at Conestoga Valley, which really has not come close to that since. You know, tell us a little bit about that run.
Cantafio, first word that pops in my mind is innovator.
Yeah,
that's true.
So think about the game back in the 80s and early 90s, beer. Beer and wing tee.
Yeah,
everybody ran a wing tee, but then different variations of it. You know, every two backs, two stands, receivers down, and three-point stands. As he came up, we were coming up through the ranks. You know, he used to come. I remember him coming to watch him play midget football. A-team, junior high. He went to the University of Miami when they used to run a five-receiver, three-receiver, motion offense, no backs. He went and learned that offense and brought that back. Mm-hmm. And when I came up my sophomore year, that's the offense we started with, and that offense took us to the state championship because we went no huddle, signals, like no one knew what to do with us at all.
Yeah.
And we lost the state championship on bad call. We made a stop on the goal line, that's neither here nor there, but we had that state championship, but because he was so innovative.
Yeah, that's true.
We call him Don Kane because he could sell water to a whale. I remember making high teams of us dunking on my vertical. He sent out tapes to 300 schools, every single school. I remember when I was my junior year, going into my senior, I had 38 offers. Obviously, Corey was a year behind me. He had 43 offers.
Yeah.
Everybody was coming through CV, and you know, by the end of my sophomore year, I think we finished ranked 25 in the nation. Mm. So. Corey was the number one receiver, even though you're the number one receiver coming out of high school. I was a Reebok, I was a third-team All-American. So we had all that attention coming through our school because of Cantafio, because he was an innovator.
Yeah.
Not allowed to sell. Yeah. I mean, we went to, I don't know if you guys remember, my senior year was, I think, 93. Harrisburg had that team that was ranked number 7 in the nation, but I think they ended up going 6-4 or something. I don't know what happened there, but they had 8 guys off that team go D1.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And Chump brought that team down to CV, which I don't know how Cantafio did it. They came down with like 3 or 4 buses, and we went 7-on-7 versus Harrisburg, and we destroyed them.
Hmm.
And every time I see Sean Lee, we talk about that, and he's just like, it was so cool. But like they came down there, we looked like a ragtag outfit with clothes weren't matching. We got a jersey, and we tore them apart. We tore them apart because we were fearless, and I think because of Catafio, we were successful. I give him all the credit, and you know, to this day, again, we were good players, but he put us in unbelievable situations. I played running back, I played receiver, I played quarter, I did everything. So he did what he used what he had, and he got it done, plain and simple.
Tell us about your recruiting. I think this is always, this is like default for me, for anybody who plays major college, the recruiting has got to be somewhat of an interesting story. So tell us about your recruiting.
So, you know, obviously it's totally different than it is now.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting letters. I remember the first couple times I got a letter, I was like, you know, it's just a normal typed up letter. You're like, yeah, what is this? You know, like, hey, Virginia Tech. We think you're a player and we're going to be watching you. Okay, whatever. So then they went from that to handwritten. Then they went from handwritten to phone calls. And I always tell kids, imagine, I would love to play college football too. I just want this to be over. And they're like, what? The phone ringing over and over and over. As soon as I step in the door, South Carolina's on the phone. And I remember one time talking to Lou Holtz. Because I wanted to go to Notre Dame. But I had already picked my 5 visits. And I had just got back from my visit at Pitt, I think it was. You know, with Johnny Major. I just got back. And when I walked in the door, because I had already made my visit for Maryland, I was going to go to Maryland. And he called. And I was like, so, you know, I didn't, you know, you don't know. And nobody in my family had been through it. I didn't know if I could have canceled Maryland and went to Notre Dame, because that's actually where I wanted to go. So he called me and I was like, well, Coach already made me. He said, all right, well, you know, hey, listen, we want to offer you. We love you, have you here. And, you know, if something changed, let us know, blah, blah, blah. So a cool story, I'll pause that for a second, but a cool story is when I was playing for the Carolina Panthers, there was a receiver on our team. His name was Kerry Hood. He played for South Carolina when Lou Holtz was there. We had a bye week, and he said, hey, you want to go down to South Carolina? I'm going to, you know, just see the team and go down. Oh, yeah, cool. So we went down to South Carolina. You know, we pull up, whatever. Everybody lets stay, you know, everything. He's a driver. So we walk out on the field, and, you know, Lou Hulse is on his golf cart. So he's driving around, you know, yelling into his megaphone and all that stuff. And he comes over. He said, hey, Kerry, buddy. He gives him a hug. How are things going? Okay, you know, we talk, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, who's this young man? He said, oh, Coach, this is Daryl Day. He's a teammate of mine at Carolina. He said, oh, okay, Daryl, hey, nice to meet you. He said, you know, where are you from?
Oh, I
said,
boy.
Lakers of Pennsylvania. He said, what? I said, Lakers of Pennsylvania. You probably never heard of it. He said, Lakers of Pennsylvania, Constant Valley? Yeah. Jim Catafio is your coach? Yeah. He said, oh, you're the guy that screwed me.
Oh, my said, God.
Now, you might be, it's Lou Holt. I said, what? Yeah, you're the guy that screwed me. What do you mean? He said, how's your career in Syracuse? I was like, good. He said, exactly. Yeah. And he was laughing. He's like, I'm Leo. I was just messing with you. I was like, I could not believe this man's, I mean, he was rattling off all this stuff about me. Yeah. And this was 5 years later.
That's pretty great.
And he remembered it like it was nothing.
Because your last 5, from what I read, was Maryland, NC State, Pitt, Purdue, and Cuse. Why did you choose the Cuse?
The Cuse, I felt like they were so brutally honest. And I don't know, because I don't know how much information I can give out on here, but like, there was like, you know, to go to different schools, and it was so much, I mean, they were all good, but it was just, you go in there, like, what do your mom do for, like, what do you need? Like, it was like, that was kind of weird to me, you know? But Syracuse is like, listen, we think you're a good player. We have some good guys here. We by your redshirt freshman year, you might see the field a little bit, but by your redshirt sophomore year, you should be in a rotation. And I was like, you know, I think that's honest. Everybody said, oh, you're gonna come and start as a freshman. You're gonna be an All-American your first year. And I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. You know, I don't feel comfortable with that. So that's why I went to Syracuse. It was a beautiful campus. I mean, it was freezing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I figured, you know, they're like, it's cold, but you don't play outside, so you'll be fine. So, and then the fact that we lived in apartments, we didn't live in dorms, it was just really cool.
And then,
you know, when I got there on campus, McNabb was my roommate.
I was going to say, you roomed with McNabb, right? What are your memories of that, of playing and rooming with him?
It was really cool to see the the maturation and the where we started, mm-hmm. and then how that thing ended. I remember sitting in the bed on draft day, mm-hmm. you know, and sitting there and said, with the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Donovan McNabb. And I said, what? Because again, there was no social media. I had no idea that he was that level good. But I had no idea that he was that.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
interesting.
And I remember sitting there saying, what just happened? So, and then, you know, years later, as we get older, you realize, oh my God. So on our pro day at Syracuse, there were 26 NFL teams there. And I said, oh, now it makes sense. Now it makes sense. They were there because he was possibly the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Ray Rose, like Holmgren, Walsh, like every legendary coach you could think of was there.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable, and I had an unbelievable day, and I think that's what got me opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it wasn't for the Saints giving up all their picks, they called me during the draft, and they were like, "We really want to draft you. We're just working on getting some picks back."
Is that when they traded all their picks for Ricky Williams? That was that year, right?
Ricky Williams, yep. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
the entire draft. So, but I mean, that still was, it was just an unbelievable experience.
And then, hanging around in the NFL, how close did you come? What was, compare and contrast that to college? How was that? What was that like? The NFL experience.
So I got to play in all the in preseason games.
Yeah.
And the closest I got to being on the field was 2001 when Dungy was in Tampa.
Hmm.
I had gotten there from Carolina. They picked me up from Carolina. I had been there 2 weeks. And he said, you got to be ready to go. So they traveled me. So I traveled that season, but I never got a chance to get activated.
Oh, okay.
So, but I think if Dungy stays there in 2002, my career is totally different than it is.
Interesting.
I think I end up being a 12-year vet. But Rudy came in, even though he liked me, every day he said, oh, just keep busting your hump. I got a spot for you on his team. He had a thing for big, he wanted everybody to be 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", you know? So he just wanted a big receiver. They went and got Joe Jarabicious, brought in Keenan McCardle. We already had Keyshawn. They drafted Marquise Walker from Michigan. He was like 6'3".
So he just wanted big guys,
you know? So that was just his thing. So just, you know, just kind of, you know, I'm 6 foot, even though I was 6 foot, you know, 195. You know, that was not, I, when I tell people, like, I kind of, I think I was, like, Hines Ward, in my opinion, a little bit more athletic, because I was physical like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't afraid to block, I wasn't afraid to take guys on, and that's how my game was. So, like, I really got to do my thing in the preseason, but I never got a chance in the regular. I mean, I got to return punts and kickoffs and games, stuff, but just, like I said, only in the preseason.
And then the final piece of this is, NFL Europe, and I'm interested in that because as much because of the football as because just living in Amsterdam. So what was that? How did that evolve? And tell me what that was like, because I think people have sort of forgot almost that existed.
Yeah, NFL Europe was an unbelievable opportunity, and like, and it's crazy, like, I haven't talked about this in forever, so as I'm talking about it, I feel like I'm making up a story. Like, of all teams, if you want to go to, Amsterdam was the one, because it's like New York City times 5 million.
That's interesting.
If that makes any sense. Mm. I mean, it was New York City on steroids times 50 times 55 more than that. So it was unbelievable. And then the football, like, we played in, they had this unbelievable stadium because the soccer team was very, 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 very good. Their national team, and at that time the Euro Cup was going on, so their national team was very, 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 very good.
Mm.
And so we played in that stadium, and it was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable. And up to 2011, I think it was, I had a record for most receiving yards in a game, which I had no idea. Somebody, I don't know if a kid or a parent or somebody told me, I didn't even know. I didn't know I had the record for the most receiving yards in a game up to like 2011 in NFL Europe, and I think they ended in 2013 or something.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience, a great living in another country, learning another language. I mean, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And then again, being able to play football at a high level. So I think that was very important just as well.
To put a bow around this, you had looks from Detroit, Minnesota, Carolina, and Tampa Bay. What do you think the difference is between the guys that end up making a team, especially at receiver, and the guys that don't? It's got to be a really fine line.
It is. So back then, it was kind of like the good old boy network.
Ah.
So what I mean, like that, like for example, when I was in Minnesota, Denny Green, he's a Harrisburg guy, so I figured, oh, he's going to take care of me. Because besides Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Jake Reed, I think I was the fourth best receiver without a doubt. But what happened was, there was Billy Cockerham, who was a quarterback from Minnesota, who they took care of, and they ended up moving him as a receiver on a practice squad. Then Troy Walters was there, who's now a receiver coach in the NFL, and he was a Stanford guy. And Denny Green was a Stanford guy. So it was like little things like that. They would, you know, same thing with Detroit. Like the receiver coach didn't like, he didn't like rookies at all. He just didn't like rookies. So, I mean, no matter, and like I was, like again, I was the fourth best receiver on that team too. So like everywhere I've been, it just tough because if I had a draft number behind my name, my whole career would have been different.
That's interesting. Now, what if you could?
That's all I think. It was a number.
That happened. I think that particular thing happens a lot.
In all sports, really.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you could talk about the mental side? And I have a little story that I always attach to this. One time, I was watching an Eagles. It was a regular season practice. And Asante Samuel he had a minor injury, and he was just watching this one-on-one receiver DB drill. And he would be calling out the routes, like literally as the guys were releasing off the line of scrimmage. And finally, one of the offensive coaches yelled over at him, "How could you possibly know that?" And he goes, "I got the 4-1-1 on all y'all over there." I wonder if you could just talk about how important the mental side is at that level, how that can be a differentiator between, you know, who's good and who's not, who makes a team and who doesn't.
That's a great, great observation, a great point, because I remember when you get to the, when I got to the NFL, you line up and guys like, "Oh, you're running a slant." "Oh, you're running a go route." Because young guys, like Jerry Rice, the reason why it's so effective, every single thing looked the same.
Right.
And so I learned that early about making everything look the same, because I was a student of the game. So these young guys get in there, like this whole new thing of releases and all this pretty stuff and all that, like, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But the thing is, a lot of these guys that are mirroring the Justin Jeffersons and all that, those guys that are doing these releases and stuff like that, you're mirroring Justin Jefferson. You're not him. So you can't do, your releases need to come more from a technical aspect. But you get up there, and when they say stuff like that, Tom Brady waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, like that is real. That is real. Yeah. Studying film and every little nuances, like, okay, I can see what is what. Like being around Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and all those guys like that, like they really knew what was going on. It wasn't just for all we just go out there and run around like bay maniacs. Every little, oh, he steps this way. Hey, play. They would call plays and the recognition and form. Like if you get up there and you lined up wrong, Rodney Barber said, "Hey, you need to move out. I know you're running the corner, but you're too tight. Move out, son." You're running the corner. Move out.
That's cool.
They knew formation. They recognized. They knew splits. I mean, it was unbelievable. I became such a student of the game. So even though I didn't end up being a 12-year vet, those 3 years I was in, I understand now at 47, that was for me to learn what I need to learn to pass it on. And I'm good now at 47. Or 26, I was not, because I wanted football more than anything.
Sure.
Interesting.
At 47, I'm all good now because I understand that was my role. I was supposed to learn, build a resume, so that way I could pass it on to the young ladies, the young men, as we move on. And I'm cool with it now.
That's very cool. I love that. I love that that's your mindset. And I love that you've been able to do that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Darryl, tell us about, just tell people, we'll wrap it up and tell us, you know, what people who want to contact you, want to have their son or daughter, or even the son or daughter, how they contact you and how you make it happen.
Well, they can reach me at Didi Holsta on Instagram, at Didi Holsta on Twitter.
And this is WHOLE, right?
Yeah. And it's DDWHOLESTA. on Instagram and Twitter. You can email me at ddstokes@yahoo.com. That's how mostly everybody, you know, message me or something. And yeah. a lot of, my business has grown off of word of mouth, so a lot of times one of my clients has passed my number one to somebody. So, and then people contact me that way. So, that's generally how I, you know, people contact me, and, you know, the first thing I ask them is, like, what are you looking to do? Like, what is your plan?
Yeah.
Because when they come to me, we're not just going to just randomly just be doing stuff. I want a plan. We're going to have, a beginning point, and then we're going to have an end point. Like, what is our goal? Because when people come to me, we're going to set goals, and we're going to go get them. And that's the bottom line. We're not just going to come here and do stuff, and I'm not going to just let things slide. We're going to be held accountable. They're going to have things we're going to have to do on a regular basis. To continue to train, and again, like, I'm very, very serious about it, and I treat, and I have, if you look at my website and stuff, everything's about family, because I genuinely care about these kids. Like, once they play, I go to, like, my college guy, I go see them play, I go see my field hockey player play, I go to see my soccer players play, my basketball, so, like, I truly treat this as a family, and I call them my nieces and nephews, because I really care about these kids, and want to let them know that I'm on their side.
Boom. Hey, Daryl, we are so glad. This is the perfect guest for the summer for us, and really appreciate you spending some time. Glad you could be with us.
Guys, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk and share my story. It was awesome reliving these great memories.
Well, thank you so much, Daryl. Be well.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, be well. That was Daryl Daniel. That was great. Yeah. And there were a number of things that jumped out to me, Mike. One of them was when he was talking about the whole thing about how they just know by alignment. It reminded me when we had Andy Phillips on, and he was just talking about offensive line.
Yeah,
play.
That's right.
And
yeah.
It was like, if a guy, like, is, you know, literally inches away from where he was previously, he's going to do this, or you can do that, or whatever. And that kind of stuff really fascinates me.
You know? Me too. And I think it would be so cool if they could translate that to television.
Yeah.
But even a guy like Romo and Herb Street, who really do try to break it down, it's really impossible to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That guy can see that. I think he can see what route he's running from, you know, breaking it down at that sort of micro level. And a lot of people would probably roll their eyes at that. I would love that.
I find that endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, love the process. I love the process and player development and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's endlessly interesting.
Yeah, and there are a couple other things he said too about how Anthony Ivey is the Mona Lisa to me for his route running. That was interesting.
That was interesting and surprising to me, because in high school, he was not the guy who would have the 12 catch game.
Right.
12 catches for 160, whatever. He was a big play guy.
Right.
And a lot of it was on special teams. A lot of it was as a kick returner.
I remember that.
And a lot of it was
run down the field.
Runs past the guy. I did not see him. I only saw him play a couple times in high school. I did not see a great route runner, but I just didn't see it. And not because it wasn't there. You just didn't. Nobody could see it. It wasn't part of.
He didn't need to be.
Of the way he was used.
Because he would just run right past guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's because that's just the nature of the high school game. The final thing that I thought was interesting, how he didn't really understand how good McNabb was, that he was going to be this
guy. Yeah,
that was very interesting to me.
Yeah, and then he goes to and I didn't quite understand that. Then he went to the combine, or the pro day, I mean.
Right.
Well, didn't the pro day happen before the draft? Yeah, I was a little confused
about
that, but that's weird because, and almost maybe a little bit, Eastern football still then.
Maybe so.
A little bit. He was seen as the best player in the Big East,
right?
As I remember, but maybe not nationally.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is, well, you know, Big Red is the guy who saw something in him the same way as he did for a guy who is playing from quarterback for him now, who's pretty good.
We've talked about this before, that Andy, I mean, he has his blind spots as a coach, obviously, but one of his great strengths is understanding quarterback talent just implicitly. And this is the story I've told before on the pod, how when he was an assistant in Green Bay, they handed him a stack of VHS tapes of college quarterbacks then, And Mike Holmgren said, tell me who's good. And he identified Matt Hasselbeck, who was a guy, you know, and he had a long NFL career. I mean, Andy knows quarterbacks.
I guess. Yeah. He was, really.
Because nobody saw Patrick Mahomes being this. No. Nobody. Nobody saw him being this.
He didn't win in college.
Yeah, which is amazing to me.
He didn't win in college, and his college coach got an NFL job.
How do you figure that?
That whole thing is weird. Yeah.
But Andy, he has blind spots, but he knows quarterbacks. Yeah. He absolutely knows quarterbacks.
We all have blind spots, but he's going to be one of the all-time great coaches. He's going to be, he'll probably, when he retires, he'll be seen as one of the top 10.
I would think.
For sure.
I mean, he's got 2 Super Bowls now, and I think he'll win a couple more with that guy there.
He certainly could. And a lot of the stuff that you mentioned is just, I mean, you can't deny that. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff fascinates me. It really does. Like the fact that you know Daryl Daniel lines up against Rondé Barber and said, "Oh, I know you're going to run a corner." You know, before you've even taken a step, you have one of the best corners in the NFL saying, "No, I know exactly where you're going to go." I love that.
I was right behind Rondé Barber in line to check in at a game.
Okay.
Oh, he was working for somebody. He was doing media for somebody. And he's not any bigger than I am.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, you could tell you were looking at an elite athlete from his body size. You weren't looking at a guy like me, but he literally was not any bigger than me. In fact, I think I was a little bit bigger than him.
Isn't that fascinating?
Because we were right next to each other, you know, and I was like, shit, I can't believe that, you know.
And here's the interesting thing. One of the many interesting things about that is NFL guys don't wear many pads, including guys that size, which is always fascinating to me that they don't.
Less than they used to.
Yeah, too. because they speed is everything, as we've seen every Sunday for, you know, time immemorial. But it's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Well, I had one like that, too. The whole Iverson thing where they listed him at 6 foot or 6'1", he's not any taller than I am, and I'm 5'10", probably.
Yeah, you're more than 5'10".
I don't know about that. It just speaks to, you know, just, you know, the genetics of it and the training of it and, you know, 1,000 other factors that enter into it.
Yeah,
just,
there's a lot of things that go into it, but unbelievable physical talent is one of those things.
Right.
Just genetic stuff that's going on.
Right.
Especially when, don't even get me started on a guy like Iverson, who might really be inch for inch and pound for pound one of the greatest athletes who ever lived, honestly.
Could be. I always thought, just for starters, pound for pound, he was the toughest guy in the NBA.
Because
how many times did you see him splattered on the court?
Yeah.
And he's coming right back at you the next time. He obviously, again, a guy who had a lot of downside. But you could never question his toughness, never, ever, ever, or his will to win.
He would complain about this when the refs called it this way. He would often actually initiate that contact.
He would
put himself in a situation where he was going to get knocked out of his ass.
Well, you know, he started out as a football guy in high school, and for a long time, football was the game that he liked more. So he kind of, he kind of came by that whole mindset, honestly, I think.
One time, my brother and I and my dad went to Virginia Beach to play golf, and we ended up getting snowed in. So we were in this bar in Virginia Beach, and we were talking to people who knew Iverson and saw him play in high school. And they insisted, there's no question, he was better at football than he was at basketball.
Isn't that amazing?
And he was a quarterback, safety, and kick returner, punt returner. I mean, every chance you could to get the ball in his hands and let him run
How much run fun would that be to watch him play football?
And they won state titles, you know?
Yeah. So we wanted to talk, speaking of basketball, James Harden today turned down his $35.6 million, or actually, excuse me, he opted into his So he opted in, but the intention of that is that he and the Sixers are going to try to figure out a trade. And Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN's redoubtable NBA insider, said that he has played his last game in Philadelphia. Now, I'm of two minds on that. I think that's fine because, as I've talked before, I think they've just become real stale. But on the other hand, how are you going to replace that production, at least the regular season production? You better come up with something pretty interesting.
Daryl Morey is really on center stage now. He's got to come up with something, and he's got to come up with something
while getting rid of a guy that he clearly loves.
Right.
That's another thing about it. I mean, he was the thought has long been that he was sort of joined at the hip with Harden.
Sure.
That's I guess that's gonna. I mean, I almost feel like, well, it's only reported that he's asking for a trade, but if it's Woj, it must be.
I think he can take it to the bank.
He's in a different category, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy that way. But, yeah, so I can't even – there's no sense in even speculating. I can't imagine what they're going to do. But, boy, Darryl's on the clock now, man.
Yes, I mean, all offseason there was talk that he was going to opt out and go to Houston. So I don't know if this opens the door for them to trade with Houston. And if so, I'm not sure I can name three guys on Houston's team. I'm sorry. And I'm an NBA guy, but I can't name – and they're pretty a young team. But I can't imagine that you're going to...
Oh, you're a discriminating NBA guy. That's why you don't know any Houston Rockets.
That must be what it is. But yeah. I can't name three guys on their team. There's that guy, Shen Goon, who's a post guy. They don't need a post guy.
Yeah, he's nothing. I mean, he's something, but he's not what they need, obviously. So, yeah, I don't know what happens there. And I can't even... It's so hard to imagine. I mean... Would the other team, taking on all that money?
That's a big number.
The cap implications of it. I mean, you could probably get two players, but they're not going to be difference-making players.
And I can't imagine. I mean, it's... Yeah, I think they need to move on from Harden, but I just don't know how they can get better when they move on from Harden.
How do you get better? And you're trying to win now, and Joel Embiid is doing this, you know?
Yeah, that's the speculation. If they don't hit big with this trade, is Joel Embiid a year from now going to say, I want out of here?
Or I was tapping my watch there, audience. Yeah, I guess it's not a visual medium. Hello, Mike. Anyway.
So that interests me, though, that just how... But I do think that they needed to mix it up, but I'm not. And then there's the whole Tobias Harris part of it too.
Just going to bring that up.
Yeah, that's an expiring contract. And then the name that you hear, like, what does Damian Lillard want to do? I guess he wants to play for Miami, maybe, but maybe he wants to stay in Portland too. He's not a guy that's going to bang his fist. He doesn't seem like that kind of a guy.
No, he doesn't.
And which I like about him, and, in addition to the fact that he's just a phenomenal player.
Yeah.
So
even these recent proclamations from him that have been perceived in the media like, okay, he's ready to leave and he wants to win a championship at all costs, didn't seem that strident to me.
He doesn't seem like that kind of guy at all.
Everybody's okay, that's it, he's all in for winning and going somewhere where he can get a ring, really? That doesn't sound that like he feels that adamant about leaving.
But anyway, free agency starts at 6 p.m. on Friday, which means there'll be deals announced at 6:01, which, gee, I wonder how that happened. Very curious to me. Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. We wanted to talk about a local story, too. Curtis Waltman, who was a Garden Spot football and basketball great, coming back to coach the Spartans basketball team, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, that is interesting. He's a guy who, he's the second leading scorer in the history of our league around here. He scored 26, almost 2,700 points.
Did not realize that.
He was a really, really, really good high school player. Just a guard, just a little guy, but he could really shoot it. And he was quick and tough, and he was on a team where they kind of freewheeled it, and he kind of had free reign, and they were pretty good, which Garden Spot has not been that great over the years.
No, they don't have a great tradition.
No. And then he went to Villanova for football.
Yep.
He probably would have had to go like D3 to play basketball, college basketball. So Villanova, good school, and he got some money, I'm sure, scholarship money, and he played football, never really got any traction in their football program, but, went there and graduated. He has been a football coach since then. I don't know that he's coached basketball. As far as I know, he has not coached basketball. And Garden Spot is a sort of long, middling, mediocre program that doesn't seem to have a lot of juice at all.
No.
He's a pretty dynamic guy.
I think
he's a strong personality.
He always has been.
He's a smart guy. He's a talker.
Yep.
So this was looking like a pretty, like, high school. We both like high school basketball.
Sure.
Yeah. It's my favorite, by far my favorite high school sport.
Yes, no doubt.
Next winter was looking pretty dull in our league. It wasn't looking like a lot of great, obvious returning players that are, at least guys that are going to be seniors. I mean, some real young guys. I don't see a great team in our league. I mean, maybe. We'll of course, we'll see, but I don't know. It's a little more interesting with Curtis Waltman in the picture.
As you said, he has always been a really bright, really charismatic guy. And I would think that if anybody could awaken that program, it would be Curtis.
Yeah.
I just feel like that.
So that's, it suddenly gets a little more interesting in high school hoops.
I wanted to mention one last thing that I'm working on. So last week was the 35th anniversary of the release of Bull Durham. So obviously a favorite movie of both of us.
Yeah.
So I called up Mike Sauerbaugh, who's been on our pod, a great guy. He played a Donegal player. And is now a coach for the Cleveland Guardians.
Both remember it.
Yeah. And also Mitch Johnson, who pitched at Donegal a few years. And actually, Mitch reminded me that his younger brother actually was a teammate of Mike's in basketball and baseball at Donegal. And also Tom Herr, who obviously had a long... So it's really been interesting to hear. My favorite story that has emerged from that is Mike, as his second year as a minor league manager...
You're talking to these guys about the movie.
About the movie, okay. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't explain that well enough. But just their impressions of the movie and what was real, what didn't seem so real. And Mike, I think, said when he was on our pod that he knew of people who got the rain out like they did in the movie. But the other thing he told me, that he said that his second year as a minor league manager, he was ticked off his team, so he's dressing him down in the clubhouse after the game, and he actually trotted out the word lollygaggers, which really amused me. And he said, his coach said, "Did you really just say what I think you said?" Which just, those who have seen the movies recall the great scene where the manager threw the bats into the shower and went into this long tirade about lollygaggers and Robert Wool. So that makes him lollygaggers.
There you go. A couple of things. One, Dave. Is it Sheldon?
Ron Shelton. Yeah.
Wrote a book.
Yep.
About the making of that movie.
Yep. And which Dave is a great book. Yeah.
Dave reviewed the book, and so it's a little bit of a little bit of Bull Durham nostalgia going on.
Right? Yeah.
And the other is tell people where they can read it.
It will be on my blog at some point within the next week. It's GordyJones.com. So I'm looking forward to writing it because, you know, I'm not a big guy. I've never watched The Natural. I've never watched Field of Dreams, but I love Bull Durham just because I think it rings true. And except the only thing, and this is something that all three of the guys I talked to said, that Tim Robbins' motion, no.
Yeah, well, many people have said that. It was a little bit of a reach. But such a perfect tone.
Yeah.
To that movie.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And the tone of it, I have seen The Natural and Field of Dreams. Yeah. Very, very, very different tone. And those movies were good,
in their way.
But this is different.
Yeah.
It so captures the minor league feeling, the small town minor league feeling.
There's so much
about it. It could be Reading.
Yeah.
Right? It could easily be Reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mitch Johnson said that he actually played in the ballpark where the movie was shot, which was interesting to me. And, you know, he talked also about, you know, we talked about a lot of things, like the mound scene, and they all said, well, that was pretty hokey, which was actually a scene that they tried to cut, but it was actually really funny, where Robert Wool kind of jogs out and said, "What is going on?" And they talk about what they're going to get the couple for their wedding gift.
That was a little bit much.
Yeah,
but
it was funny.
Yeah, and then Wool going, "Okay, let's go
too."
But it was funny. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one thing that Mitch did say, but I asked him about, you know, there are two scenes in the movie where guys are released. The one guy early in the movie, and then Costner later on, which is a pretty gripping scene.
Yeah.
And Mitch just talked about how that is in the clubhouse. You know, when you know what's happening, and this guy walks out, and it's just like, you know, what do you say to the guy? You know, and when their dreams have, you know, been squashed. So
a couple of things. I the second last time I covered the Barnstormers, I was waiting to talk to Russ Peoples, and he had to wait a minute.
He had to call a guy in.
Yeah, it was very strange. It was just quiet. It wasn't like anybody. It wasn't like funereal or anything, you know. But it was very quiet. It was
just a reminder of that, you know, yeah, the reminder yeah. that that's there. The other thing is Taylor Funk from Mannheim Central.
That's right.
He's going to be on the Miami Heat Summer League team.
I'll be curious because that is something that you and I both discussed about the comparison to Duncan Robinson, and Taylor agrees with that.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, a part, at least peripherally, of the same team.
And the Summer League, we've had other guys, like Dustin Salisbury played in the Summer League for the Sixers, and I think another team. Anyway, because of these two-way contracts and the G League now, I think it's a little bit more promising than it was back then.
Probably so.
Yeah, these two-way contracts are a pretty good deal. Mm. And plus, you know, presumably he's going to get exposure that maybe people from Europe will see and overseas, and he'll be able to play professionally somewhere. Yeah. The dude can shoot, and we have seen so much evidence. The NBA is bananas about three-point shooting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and that's the European game, too. I mean, I'm sure he'll play somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll play somewhere for money. It's just a matter of where.
I think he will. So, anyway, that's a great opportunity to him. And then one other thing I want to say is, as I get closer to the end of my conventional sports writing career, I can't wait till I can write what I want to write about. Like you keep talking about it, and it's I can't wait till I can do that.
Yeah, I do enjoy. It was just something that kind of jogged my memory. So I think I'll call these guys up and see where they go with it. And the speaking of being cut, Sauerbaugh said that when he was a manager, he had to send a guy down, like the day before he was going to play in his hometown, and is like, this all his family. Oh. So he said that was, you know, we know Mike is a really good guy, and I'm sure that hit him right in the heart.
Yeah. So. That's rough. That's even the gruff guys. I mean, even the guys like Bill O'Brien. I mean, I've heard him talk about that. It's rough.
Yeah, but you know, really remember the Hard Knocks, the one they did with when he coached Houston? I thought it was kind of great how he did it.
Yeah.
Because they showed it, and he was very direct.
Yeah.
But I thought there was a lot of compassion in how he did
That's probably part of what I'm thinking of. Yeah. It is, in fact. Yeah, that part. Remember that scene where the guy's imitating him, and he's literally in tears laughing.
Yeah,
that was great. Yeah, all right,
so we've reached the end of our journey.
That's right. We had a lot of stuff stored up in our hump. We had a lot of sports take stored up from a week off. Thanks very much to Daryl Daniel. That was great to talk to him.
It was.
And here we go. It's summertime, and the living is easy. We'll be back with more of this stuff soon. He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See you later.
See you later.